I just wanted to say a couple of quick words. You know, I've struggled the past like year and a half with a few relapses, and my sponsor, Stephanie, has stuck with me, and she's super important to me. I love her, and most importantly, her and her husband, Teddy, they both work with me, so I just am very grateful to both of you guys. But, you know, most importantly, she introduced me to God, and that has completely changed my recovery, so I just want to thank her. Stephanie Blackman.
Before I even start, she knows me. My name's Stephanie Blackman, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is May 23rd, 94. It's cool. It's all God, believe me. I promise. You don't have to clap. I don't do much. I just want to start by thanking Bill Hatzman for asking me to speak. I moved to the city of Visalia in 2009, and so this coming year I'll actually have been in this town for 10 years. And the first year that I moved here, Bill asked me to speak, and he's asked me to speak a couple other times since I've lived here in Visalia, and I always appreciate the opportunity. I know that there's a lot of new people in this room, and there may be people in this room that aren't that new, but maybe they, you know, I just hope that I can share the message that my higher power would have me share tonight. And my main goal since going through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous is to be an agent and to carry this message. And so in starting to do that, before I get started, when I sit down across from anyone that I'm working with, the people that I take through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I say a prayer with them. And so I'm going to ask you to just repeat after me, and you don't have to if you don't want to, but I love this prayer because it helps me, and it helps me not only in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, but any other place that I go where I may take in old judgments or old ideas. Okay, so I'm going to start. God, please help me set aside everything I think I know about you, this book, the 12 steps, everything I hear in meetings, so that I may be granted with an open mind and a new experience with you and all these things. Please help me see the truth. Okay, thank you. So I don't have a lot of time, which is good. I'm going to talk fast and get out of here quick. And I'm going to start by telling you a little bit about myself. I'm originally from Ventura County. I grew up in a little military town called Port Hueneme, California. It was right on the coast, and it was awesome. You know, it was nice and cool, and it definitely wasn't a lot like Visalia. But I love Visalia, so don't get me wrong. But anyway, you know, I love to share this. I had a really good family. I grew up with my mom, and I also live with my grandparents because my mom was divorced when I was very young, and so she needed help. So we all lived together. And I had a big family. I had a lot of aunts and uncles, and we had a three-bedroom house with a den. And so everyone was in there. There was a lot of people in that house. My mom was the oldest. So I had a lot of aunts that I looked up to. I had an uncle that I really loved, and they were all part of my life, and they loved me. I was the only granddaughter for many years. And they had a lot of high expectations for me as well. They really wanted me to succeed in life, but I think each of their ideas of succeeding were very different just from the way that they were, you know, living or brought up. So the thing is, so I had this great family, but as I was growing up and I was going to school, I have to share with you that I always felt awkward. I just remember feeling awkward. I felt like people picked on me a lot. I still do. No, I'm only kidding. I felt like people picked on me a lot, and I felt kind of like a dork, and I didn't like to feel that way. I didn't really have a group either. Like, I would hang around, but a lot of the families had moms and dads, and I didn't. This was in the 70s, so I was growing up, and there weren't a lot of divorced people around. Most were like families, so I think I felt kind of weird about that. But I was in eighth grade, and seventh and eighth grade, I think, were the worst times probably for a lot of people, and I was just feeling weird. And then come eighth grade summer, I ran into some people, and I got invited to go and drink some 40 ounces of Old English, and I thought, okay, this sounds like a good idea, because I really wanted to fit in, and I was with my girlfriends, and it was these guys that picked us up, right? So I was feeling attractive, and I'm like, okay, cool. So we go with these guys, and I think I drank like maybe two or three of those. Needless to say, I got plastered, and I puked. I remember they were driving the car and had to make several stops for me to puke out the door. And I don't remember much after that. I do know that, I guess this was like eighth grade summer going into ninth grade, and once I got to high school, I was feeling pretty cool. I was feeling pretty, pretty cool by then. And I thought, you know, this is it for me. The thing about the booze that I love so much is that when I drank, all those feelings of like insecurity, awkwardness, all those kinds of things, they all went away. I mean, I felt like I was on top of the world. I felt in control. I felt powerful. I felt, you know, I just felt real cool. I felt like one of these ZZ Top girls. I felt like, you know, all this. A lot of you may not know, because I know I'm getting older, so maybe I have to find a new reference. I don't know. But anyway, videos were really in back then, okay? So it was like really cool to be like a video girl, just sit there and dance while guys were playing music. That was my dream, my goal. This started my drinking career. And so, you know, I started drinking as I was going through high school. I'm just going to try to do this real quick. As I was going through high school, I went to the parties back then. We would have keggers on the weekend. I would be at people's houses. There were live bands playing. I mean, it was awesome. Bonfires on the beach, you know. This was just cool. There was a lot of stuff going on, but I do have to tell you, even beginning in high school, I started to have some consequences for my drinking. I got caught stealing in ninth grade. I was stealing from Thrifty Bacardi 151. So I did have to do community service. At the time, my aunt was teaching the classes, like sober classes or whatever they were teaching back then, alcoholism classes. And so I couldn't participate in that class. I had to go and cut weeds for like a couple, 9 hours or something. So I did that. And, you know, I also just had... I was wild, and so I had a lot of humiliating experiences. And I remember walking around the campus at times, and people would be talking about me, and I knew that they were. You know, I knew that they were talking about me. And I would feel yucky inside. I would, but you know what? That yuckiness didn't stop me from going to the next party. It didn't stop me from missing class and going with my friends and going drinking all day and taking the booze out of her parents' cabinet and filling the booze bottles with water. That humiliation never stopped me from any of that. I didn't care. Because I knew once I had that alcohol in, I felt great. I don't even think I knew it at the time, but I just did it. You know, back then in the 80s, we had, and this is an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, so I'm not going to talk a lot about other issues, but I did have outside issues going on as well as with my drinking. And so, continuing on through high school, by the time I graduated, I already, like, right after I graduated, I ended up getting placed on a 5150 hold, and I ran away with my mom's car. I stole all kinds of money. I was doing all kinds of stuff. I was never home. I was running around with all kinds of people, and I was able to work, but, you know, I was rarely home at night, and so I got placed on this hold, and I got stuck into Vista Del Mar hospital, and I was there for over 30 days. And when I got out of there, I said to myself, and while I was in there, I said to my parents and to anyone else concerned, you know what, guys, I'm never going to do this again. I'm just not going to do it again. And I got out of there, and for a while I didn't do anything. I didn't do anything. You know, I was able to stay sober for a while. And then I got started going through the psych tech program, and I started to do that. And I have to tell you, like at the Cam State Hospital down south, is probably not the best place to be in the early 90s for someone who wants to be straight, all right? Because nobody at the hospital was straight. Like everyone was drinking and partying and having a lot of fun. I'm talking about the staff. So, you know, that was it for me. I loved it. I was making a lot of money. I graduated the psych tech program. I was partying there, you know, on graduation day. Once I finished, we went to this bar. I was drinking, and I remember I was taking shots of kamikazes. I was all excited, happy. I just really, my intention was just to have a couple, and I couldn't control it. So my intention was to have a couple drinks, and what ended up happening is I drank so much that I was outside laying, like, by the fountain. I don't even know where anyone else went. It was just me laying out there by this fountain that was enclosed in grass. And, you know, that was my graduation from the psych tech program. And after that, like I said, I was making a lot of money. I moved out. I got a fake ID. I was in the bars every night. I loved it. And, you know, when I read Bill's story, and I have to tell you, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous in 1994, I read this book. I read it with people. I read through it. I had no connection with it whatsoever. And it wasn't until I moved to the town of Visalia in 2009 that I met somebody who stood in front of me from a podium like this and told me their story and sat down with me and actually took me through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, showed me how to read this book. And from that point forward, I have to tell you, my life has changed dramatically, right? So when I talk about Bill's story, Bill is an old guy. He grew up a long time ago. If you read his story like a novel, it's kind of, I don't know, it's weird. It's got weird language in it. I don't relate to him. He's a stockbroker. He's doing all this. I didn't do any of that. I could barely do anything. And here's Bill, right? He's got this wife and all that. And the things I could relate to, though, that I learned as I went through this book is that I had to ask myself the question, do I think, drink, and feel like Bill, Bill W., the co-founder, right? There's a chapter in here called Bill's Story. So I start to read this Bill's story, and I start to see that the drinking that I had been doing back then when I set out just to have one or two, eventually what ended up happening is I lost control. I couldn't do it anymore. So I would set out, like I took my mother and grandmother out for Mother's Day, my brother and I, and I said, okay, I'm not going to drink, because I knew, I just knew, like if I drink, I couldn't stop. So we went out to drink, but I would tell myself, okay, so we go out to drink, and then they say, oh, you have to wait for your table. We're at a real fancy restaurant, and I was wearing nylons, right, because that was in back then, and they said, okay, you have to wait for your table. So I'm waiting for the table, and they said, you guys can wait in the bar. And I said, oh, okay. So we go to the bar, and I have to tell you, I don't even remember how many drinks I had. I had no intention of drinking that day. I really wanted my mom and grandma, who had done so much for me, I really wanted to buy them an expensive dinner and show them this awesome time, you know, and I couldn't do it. What ended up happening is I got so drunk one more time, like I was just laughing the whole time. I don't even think I ate. And then on the way out, I fell down on the cement and skinned my knee, ripped my nylons. My knee was bleeding, right? And my brother had to carry me to the car. So the whole point of the story is that eventually what ended up happening, and I can't tell you when it happened, but once I put alcohol in my system, I couldn't control the amount of booze that I drank anymore. I would only set out to have one or two. I remember getting ready to go out drinking with my aunt, and I would set out to have one or two drinks, and I couldn't control it, you know? I would drink way more. I'd be up all night. I'd end up in weird situations, and I'd be humiliated, saying to myself and the people around me, I'm never going to do this again. And then I would do it again. I would do it again. And you know what the funny thing is? It's not like I would wait a week and do it again. I'd wake up the next morning and think, I don't feel good. I got a headache. I need a Bloody Mary. I'm going to do it again. I wasn't thinking I'm not going to do it again. I was just thinking this is the way of life. And so I would have remorse. I would feel bad. I would have shame. But then I would drink again. And we call that the craving, right? So I'm having this craving going on once I stick the booze in. And even the next day, I can't fight the craving. The booze isn't out of my system yet. You know, if I'm able to put together like I did when I was in that rehab over 30 days, I got out and swore I wouldn't drink again. And then, you know, like 2 or 3 weeks later, there I am with a beer in my hand again. That's what we call the obsession. This is all step one. This is the stuff I've learned in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So anyway, my life progressed. My story progressed. I ended up marrying somebody that had been to prison for a really long time, and I felt protected by this person. I felt like this is the life I wanted, and that person did take good care of me, because at the time I really couldn't work or do anything. I mean, I was just... I'm a totally different person from who I was back then. I was a wreck. I was an empty shell. I had like a blackness inside of me. And I met this person, and they really did help me. I feel like at that time, they had their own stuff going on. The person was a heroin addict. And so I went on this ride with this person for quite a while, and... You know, I started going to jail myself. What ended up happening towards the end is that I had a 13 counts of felony forgery and a possession charge. And we were doing like identity theft stuff. So I wasn't a smart criminal, though. I like to say that, because I did. The neighbor gave me a checkbook with her old business on it, and the checks were no good. And so I went around, and I had a plan to buy my family Christmas presents, and I just used my own ID, and that's how I got caught. So I was not a smart criminal. So I ended up getting busted, and I went to county jail for like over 30 days. And, you know, from that point forward, I was on a diversion program because I hadn't been in trouble. But diversion back then was like you had to show up a lot, like once a week or every other week with your probation officer, and you'd have to be tested. They could come in your house. And my husband at the time was on parole, so we could have people coming through at any time. And then what ended up happening is I couldn't meet the conditions of probation. I just couldn't. And I would, you know, I'd show up and I'd do a whole bunch of stuff to get around those tests. I mean, you can get around them, no problem. I'd drink all kinds of water, dilute the test, go to this place and get some Jell-O formulation. I mean, it was all kinds of stuff I was doing. And, you know, we were running from house to house. The first time I got arrested, it was really ugly because they thought that I was my husband. I was in his truck, and they surrounded me with guns and stuff and told me not to turn around. And as soon as they said, don't turn around, I did, because I couldn't not. And so I got slammed onto the gravel. You know, but with all this, it's like, you know what, you guys, I'm sure some of you have had experiences like this, and maybe you haven't. But the thing is that even with all these consequences, I couldn't stop doing what I was doing. I couldn't stop. Even when people came to me and said, hey, we think you have a problem, right? I would be like, no, my aunts came and they tried to do an intervention when I was living on the beach. I'm like, no, you guys have a problem. You're jealous of me. I'm having fun. Get out. I wasn't working nothing. I was a scumbag, right? And I was like, no, no, you don't understand. You got to go. I was disappointing everybody. I was, you know, just, it wasn't going well. So needless to say, I got into a rehab. That was in 1994. It was for 90 days. It was awesome. Very different than what they do today. I got into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't have a ton of time. I think I have like 10 minutes left, so I just want to share really quickly. I got into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Everyone welcomed me in, like here, right? And then everyone, like, when you're in this room, it's awesome because we're all hugging you, and it's like, oh, I feel better. People like me. I look good. I have makeup on. Like, I'm feeling better, right? And I'm looking at all these people with time, and I'm going, oh, my God, I want to be like them, and I have some hope. And I started to learn things in Alcoholics Anonymous, like, you know, one day at a time, and you can do this, hang on, and so your ass doesn't fall off, blah, 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 and all these things. And I was doing everything, everything. I was totally dedicated to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I just have to tell you, like, somewhere along the line, when I was in the rehab, see, I knew that God got me there. I knew it. I was outside crying because I knew for sure there was no way that I could stop drinking or doing other things on my own power. I couldn't. And so when I got into that rehab, God put me in there, and I was outside crying thinking, this is a miracle. I don't have anything in my body. This is a miracle. Thank you, God. There's hope. Because at the end, I really felt like this is me. This is just going to be my way of life. I can't change. I don't know how to change. I'm effed, much like Bill, right? And I was hopeless, and I knew that I was just going to die, end up in jail, and this was going to be it for me. But what happened is God put me in that place, and I was in there for 90 days. God saw fit to keep me sober. But see, I started going to meetings and stuff, and what happened, this is just my experience, is that I started to learn that if I just did what people told me to do, that I would stay sober, okay? And so I stayed sober for a long time, and I was doing all these things, making the cake, being the secretary, being the treasurer, doing all this stuff, and I'm thinking, when am I going to be happy, joyous, and free? Happy, joyous, and free, right? And this is me, like, happy, joyous, and free. And as I continue on through sobriety, I was not getting happy, joyous, and free. As a matter of fact, I was irritable, restless, discontent. I wanted to kill everyone around me. I'm losing jobs. I want to murder people, right? I divorced that guy. That was like, he's done. I'm gone. You know, I couldn't keep a relationship. I had a kid. I had my daughter in sobriety. Thank God for her. And, you know, she didn't keep me sober, though. I put that kid through the ringer in my untreated alcoholism because I was running around like a lunatic. See, I thought once the beer, the booze was gone, my problems were going to be gone. I didn't realize I had a spiritual malady. I didn't realize that because I was an alcoholic, I was different from normal people. I didn't realize that if I didn't go through this work the way it's outlined in this book, that there's a good chance I was going to go back out and die, or that I was just going to die sober or go crazy. And so my life started to progress. I had 15 years. I was losing another job. I divorced yet another person. I moved back to California. I'd been living in Massachusetts for 9 years. I moved back out here. I wanted to put a gun in my mouth in sobriety. 15 years, and I thought, I want to kill myself. I can't live like this. I'm crazy. I've tried AA. I've really diligently done every single thing they've asked me to do, and it's not working for me. And then I came into the Alano Club here in Visalia just on a fluke. And I heard a speaker from the podium. And he was speaking a language that I had never heard. He was talking about going through this work. He was talking about this craving that I had. He was talking about an obsession. He was talking about this spiritual malady that I had inside and that I can't get rid of on my own power. He said he had no choice. He said he couldn't make a choice. And you know what? I related to that. And the book tells me I don't have a choice. I can't wake up and make a choice not to drink. God removed that obsession from me, and at any time it can return if I don't stay diligent in these practices. And so I heard what this man was saying, and I went to this group, and I have to tell you, it was off-putting. I didn't care for it at first. I thought these people are egotistical. They think they know what they're talking about. But I have to tell you, these two guys up front, I had 15 years. One guy had 2 years, one guy had three. And these two guys knew more about this spiritual experience and a walk with God than I had ever even imagined in the 15 years I'd been in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it knocked me off my feet. And you know what? One more time, God came in and he saved me from my selfishness and self-centeredness that I'd been living in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. My obsession that once the booze is gone, that I'm going to live like a normal person. All I have to do is just show up at a meeting, go to church, do all these things, and my life will be great. And guess what? It didn't work. Not only did I do that stuff, I went to church, I went to the shrink, I tried antidepressants, I was smoking, I didn't smoke, I didn't eat sugar, I didn't eat white flour, I went to 10 meetings, I went to, you know, this, that, I had all these regimens, and I couldn't quite shake the illness. And when I went and I heard that guy speak at the Alano Club, I went to that meeting, you know what happened? I got desperate one more time. It's like it was the second time in my life. The first time going into that 90-day program where the lady looked at me and said, the probation officer said, Stephanie, go, because I was facing 2 to 5 years in prison. So he said, Stephanie, go. I'm going to call. So I went over there to that program, and I said to the lady who wasn't very friendly, I interviewed with her, and she said, okay, go tell your grandmother to get your stuff, because one more time my grandma had been toting me around, right? Because I just use everybody and have everyone doing stuff for me. And I told the lady, no, I'm not ready to stay right now. I can't. I got to go. I have to go paint my grandmother's cabinet, so I'll be back in a couple of weeks. And she said, you either come now or you're not coming at all. And I knew. But you know what? I had known that a ton of times. I had a million consequences. But for some reason, just like I'm talking about, God flowed in there, right? And I had the ability to stay, not on my own power. On another power, a power with a capital P, not Stephanie. And so this is the same thing that happened to me. I had to be in a desperate state in sobriety, and I was extremely desperate. And this guy said to me, you need to go through this work the way it's laid out in the book. And you know, before I came to this meeting tonight, I was going through my book today, and I was reading this. I might start to cry, but God, I was getting excited because I thought, oh, I want to take these guys through like the first and second step. Like I'm all excited. I'm all, I know God can show me how to do it, right? Because I want you all to be on this path. I mean, if you're a real alcoholic, just because you're in this room, by the way, doesn't mean you're an alcoholic. I'm not going to tell you you're an alcoholic. But what I can do is I can take you through this book and you can find out on your own. Because just you showing up at a meeting and saying, I am. See, that didn't work for me. I have to have a deep and effective experience with my hopelessness in order to say, I am, and I'm effed. And if I don't do something different, I'm gonna die. And dying doesn't always mean drinking again. It could just mean separation from God, right? Because to me, that's a death today. And so I was getting extremely excited, and I thought, God, help me. If there's any real alcoholics in this room, help me convey to them the importance of finding someone who can take you through this book line by line, okay? And to show you the precise, specific instructions. Everything I'm saying right now is written in this book. If you want to ask me after the meeting where it is, I'll show you. I can find it. My life today is so different. You know what? I never had anybody ask me in that 15 years for help. Never. Never. I didn't have one woman say, will you be my sponsor? Because I was sick. Everyone knew it. You know? They're like, I don't want to be near that woman. But I don't care how much time she has. She's crazy. So nobody asked me. And as soon as I went into that room over there at 526 North Bridge Street on Thursday night at 7 p.m., I'll tell you what, God started bringing me people. And since then, I've been rocketing into this fourth dimension. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you I'm a millionaire. I'm not. I got financial issues, you know. I got life stuff going on. I work hard. I got a kid who can be challenging. I, you know, my life isn't easy, but I have to tell you, it is so good. And everything that I ever wanted, like, where was I? I don't remember, but it was something I was seeing. And, oh, I think it was a show I was watching when I was at work. And it was like this little talk show. And one of the people that were there, she called me over and she said, watch this show with me. And so I was sitting there watching it. And the lady was saying, if I had this, this, and this, then I would have everything that I ever wanted in life. And you know what came over me? This feeling of today, I have every single thing I've ever wanted in my life. I get to be an agent of God. I get to help people today. I don't forget where I came from. I have a husband who loves me, who loves God first and foremost, and who loves to help others. I belong to a group who is out in the trenches helping people that are dying. I sat across from so many women who have helped me, you know, and I have a lot of women in this room who are now helping other people too. And so this journey has been absolutely amazing. And if you want this, if you want your life to change, and you know what, I walk around today, I don't feel shame. I make mistakes, but I have a whole set of principles and ideas that I follow. I have a path that I'm on. And if I do that, I don't walk around in shame. I don't have to be crazy. I don't have to yell at people, you know. I do gossip at times. I have to turn to God a lot. God gives me some defects so I can keep turning to him. You know, I'm human. I'm definitely not done. But I just, again, I appreciate Bill asking me to be here tonight. And I wish I had enough time just to take you through this book line by line so you can have this experience that I've had. Now I want to read to you what they read at the beginning of the meeting, because I read it today and I thought, this is awesome. And I hope it has a different meaning for you now. I really want you to hear me, okay? So, hang on, just let me find it. It says, I think this is it, wait. Here it is. It says, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. And I want to tell you, if I hadn't been through this work, I couldn't show anyone how to do the work. So please don't try to help anyone if you haven't had an experience with the 12 steps. It says here, this is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message, this, out of the book, right? Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. My life has taken on a new meaning. I get to watch people recover. I get to see them help others. I get to watch loneliness vanish. I get to see a fellowship grow up about me. I have a host of friends. This is an experience that I have not missed, and I hope you don't miss it. You must not miss it. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of my life. And I am so happy to be here for you guys, and I hope you got something tonight. Thank you.